Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Corey.
Shit, what was I saying?
And I'm Corey. And this is Brainstorm. Today we're here with...
Charles Henson of Nashville Computer.
So did you get a lead up as to like what we're talking about?
No.
And oh, okay.
Okay, even
would
better.
You like that? Or you want to just jump in and we surprise you?
Either way.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it's not going to be tricky questions, right?
No, I'm just kidding. No.
So I am Charles Henson with Nashville Computer. We also go by NCI Cybersecurity because we've branched out of Nashville. We're now into the Atlanta market as well as Detroit areas. And so we answer the phone as NCI Cybersecurity and going through a rebranding of that. A lot of what we do is focus on cybersecurity and protecting small, medium-sized businesses. And we become the IT department for those businesses. I have been on this journey for over 33 years, and I've seen a lot of things change with technology and how companies can become victims. And so we always start with that security posture instead of letting security take a back seat. We don't worry about the budgets. We have to say, look, this has to be in the budget. We need to focus on this because, as we all know, the security landscape has thoroughly changed in the last 5 to 10 years. And with AI, it's changing even more rapidly.
Yeah. How do you and your team keep up with the changing landscape?
We're constantly looking at articles. We're looking at threats that have happened. How did these attacks happen? And then what's next? And what are we seeing out there? We go to industry events that are specifically for IT and hacking type events. And we talk to and work with like the FBI and the CIA, and we ask them like, what are they seeing? How are you seeing this? We hosted an event last week, and we had the cybercrime FBI agent there speaking to prospects as well as clients on what he has seen in the past and what he sees coming in the future. And so really it's just about educating ourselves, continuing to dive into like the Microsoft issue that happened over the weekend with SharePoint. You know, the engineers actually deep dive into that and say, okay, what happened? Will this affect our clients? Is there anything that we need to do? Are there any zero-day threats for us that we need to take action on? And really, it's just staying in the know and not taking a blind eye to security. You hear the news, you hear somebody had an incident or a breach, we take a deep dive in to find out why. How did they get in? What did they uncover during that incident response team going in and finding that they'll release out to the public to see?
Sure. What are some of the more common ways that you see people kind of infiltrate companies? Is it something as simple as someone accidentally clicked a link, or is it just so varied it's hard to...
Yeah, the business email compromise is the number one way that they're getting into, the number one way that they're attacking. And what they do is they look to see, can I send a fake invoice? Can I send an invoice that's going to prompt for a username and password? And chances are, if you get those kinds of things, you need to stop, call the person and say, hey, did you really send me this? And think, why is it prompting me for my username and password? Because most documents that somebody sends you won't do that. It's typically a link that's going back to them. The sad thing is, you can hire us. We can put in all of our tools and all of our best practices. If a user clicks on a link and they give authority to somebody else, it's like a kid opening a window. Even though you have all the doors and windows locked, if some kid opens a window and lets another kid in, it's not something that you authorized. It's not authorized access. But a lot of times people will call and say, hey, can you go to this website? Can you click this link? Or, you know, they'll get that fake invoice. And once they click it, then the compromise happens. And that's where our advanced tool sets go in. And when we see that type of activity, we isolate that device. So through the years, it used to be, you know, it would happen and then they'd call us and we'd say, okay, let us look at it. And they said, oh, by the way, I sent it to 3 other people and they couldn't open it either. And then we would have to go and find everywhere it is. The tool set that we have today actually allows us to see that in real time. We see that they clicked it. We see that it's having that conversation with Russia, China, wherever. And we isolate that device, and then we look at the rest of the perimeter of the network and keep an eye on it for at least 2 to 3 weeks to make sure that nothing else has happened on that machine. But then we go isolate that one issue that happened. So, but business email compromise, people are busy. they're doing their jobs, they're doing their tasks. They get a email from somebody saying, hey, I need the, you know, 1099s, or I need, you know, the W-2s for all the employees, or I need a background check done, whatever. And then they relinquish that information without even thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Our director of IT would, I'm sure, love to talk all things security with you. Yeah, absolutely. But does a great job about teaching us on links and suspicious emails and doing like phishing tests and things like that. So it's just always interesting to me to hear like outside of our industry. Obviously, banking is a pretty popular industry to hack since we have people's money. What are some of the more common industries that you've seen that are targeted for hacks? Or is it, again, just varied?
No, honestly, it used to be, let's target this company. Now they take a shotgun approach, because what they will do is they'll compromise somebody's, let's say that they went on the dark web and they, AT&T had the issue, right? Yeah. AT&T now has millions of passwords exposed. Now they're going to email somebody at that email address and say, hey, I have your password. This is what it is. I see that on the camera, you've been doing some things you shouldn't be doing. I'm going to send the information to all your contacts if you don't pay me $500 or $1,000. And so now it's just taking a shotgun approach of attacking even individuals. Wow. And so when you get those things, you have to stop and think, okay, do they really have access to my system, or did they? Is this part of that AT&T breach or some, you know, Comcast or somebody else's incident that happened that where they gained access to my old password? And then so just be thinking about that. And then the other thing, too, is the targeted attacks that we see is primarily not specifically at banks, but it's more of that home loans and the closing. The closing attorneys are getting targeted. The title companies, you know, and the simple thing that we tell people to do is, and I, you know, when I closed on a home, I just helped my daughter buy a home. And I said, look, don't send me the wiring instructions with all the digits. I want you to leave some of the digits out. If you send me all the digits, I'm not wiring the money. And, you know, I had the conversation with them because I don't want to wire money to something that you sent me via email or even in your online portal. I want to be able to pick up the phone, call you and say, here's the digits that I have. Verify the person is, you know, answering the phone that I called, and then get those missing digits. Because when I wire that money, if I wire it to the wrong person, I'm out the money.
Gone, yeah.
Right? It's the chances of getting that back are very slim.
Interesting. I wonder if they thought, okay, this guy's in IT asking us to do spend.
They appreciated fact that I was asking for that.
They should implement that for everybody, truly, if it's that much of an issue with fraud and people, you know, losing money on wires.
And, you know, talking about everybody should implement that, that one of the things that I would say is that, like, families need to have a security code. Because with AI being what it is today, there is an AI Charles out there. And if you go on YouTube, you'll find him. He's there and he's talking about cybersecurity and things. It looks like me, it sounds like me, but it is not me making the videos. My team has made them. The company we work with made the videos, but I'm not wearing jewelry in those videos. And so the difference is I don't have my wedding ring on, you know, I don't have my bracelet, my watch, things of that nature. Because it was all green screen, and I wanted to be able to say, look, this was the AI version, and this was...
Here's the tell.
This is the telltale.
Yeah.
So wait, are you being serious?
Yeah, I'm very serious.
That's scary. Oh my.
To what is the end goal of someone putting in the effort and the resources, whatever they may be? What is the end goal of making a fake AI version of you and your content?
Well, let's just say the reason I said everybody needs a family password is because grandma has, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 or more in her bank account. She gets a call from the granddaughter, grandson, saying, hey, I've been kidnapped. They're holding me hostage. They want you to wire this money over to them. And if you don't wire the money, then we're going to kill the granddaughter or the grandchild or whatever, right? So that is one case. In other cases of business, they used an AI-generated executive to get on a Zoom call with employees. He gave them specific instructions on what to do, and it was not the CEO or the executive of that business. And so with that, they're using this to manipulate people and make it look like they're, you know, it's like me, my team. If I were to get on a call with them and say, hey, I want to do some wire transfers to this company. I need you to wire this over, you know, from my other bank to INS bank, you know, and that happens, right? Like I was on vacation. I was out of the country and I told Terry, hey, I need to send some money over. Well, she asked me like 10 different questions to verify the validity of who I was. And then she was like, well, don't give me the routing information. I'm just going to go look in the filing cabinet and get it myself. And I'm like, okay, great. So my team is already looking at that. But the problem is we have this older generation that is not familiar with technology. They're not up on what is AI. They're not, they don't understand that somebody calling in may not be that person calling. Mm-hmm. And then the steps that we're taking at our IT company is we have two-factor authentication of people. And so when somebody calls in and they say, hey, I have a problem. I need help with this. I need my password changed, or I need this email box set up. We authenticate them by sending them a passcode, and then they have to read that code back to us. Mm-hmm. If they can't give us that, we're not going to help them, even if we recognize their voice, because the tools are out there and they're getting better and better every day. And people can manipulate and use those tools for their financial gain and to make people, you know, lose their money.
Right.
We actually had an employee on my team received a call, and it sounded like his mom was calling and saying that like she was in trouble and being, I think it was like being held at gunpoint. I can't remember exactly. This was like a year or two ago. And basically it was like, if you Venmo him $1,000, like they'll let me go. And so he sent $1,000 via Venmo and then called his mom after to be like, all right, like, is it good? Like, are you good? And she was like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
And so they made it look like it came from like her number and had her voice, and somehow he was able to get his $1,000 back. I think he moved pretty quickly. I've never heard of a case where you can Venmo money and then claw
usually
that
it's
back.
Gone.
Yeah.
I'd be so upset to be ransomed for only $1,000.
Only $1,000.
You might find this interesting though, Charles. I just read an article the other day that Sony has released the market's first camcorder that records authenticity data along with video clips as like metadata as part of the video file, like embedded in the video file. I only skimmed it, so I don't know the in-depth details, but people are thinking about how to embed authenticity metadata into video files.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you want to authenticate that is actually
the
you
true.
There,
yeah.
Right? I mean, there's so many people now, like you can go out on a forum and say, hey, I found this old black and white photo of me and my grandmother on the beach, you know, back in the 50s or whatever, 60s. And people will not only make it full color, but then they'll animate it and automate it. And it looks like that picture just came to life, and the waves are coming in, the people are moving, and I mean, it's really cool, but it's really scary. Because now you can take almost anything and manipulate it and say, okay, well, this is just a picture of me. Now it turned to animation of you. So they take a still photo and make it a movie. And so, you know, just, it doesn't take much for AI to be able to adapt to that voice and to that picture and or video, and you can compromise, you know, be compromised. And you know, we saw this with the deep fake with Obama. The guy was standing there, you know, recording himself talking, and you saw, you know, President Obama at the time talking, and it was clearly this guy, you know, making him say whatever he wanted to say. And so you have to check the validity of everything. And, you know, my wife hates technology, and she'll be on YouTube and she's like, no, that's fake. No, that's fake. She said, that's AI generated. And now if you look at the bottom of the AI or YouTube videos, they have to say whether or not it was partially generated by AI or if there's AI editing that was contributed to that video.
But is that all AI has to have that on there? Or is it like if you kind of built out something, you know, for nefarious purposes, you could kind of bypass that? I mean, I feel like
You could upload it to YouTube, and then you could embed that video in your own website, and then people couldn't see where it actually came from. Same thing with Vimeo and some of the other platforms that you can host the site. You can actually host the video on your own website, and therefore you wouldn't see that content.
I gotcha.
So you just have to do your due diligence and say, you know, is this true? Is it false? Is it is this something I need to believe? Because everything that we see today, unfortunately, isn't reality.
Mm-hmm. That's,
well, that's concerning.
I feel like I've like just stepped into like that movie. Inception.
This is like a episode of Black Mirror. There's no hope and everything's fake.
No, there's hope. Have a password for your family. So if the mom had said, you know, dinosaurs or, you know, whatever the keyword was, or if he said, well, what's the passcode, and the, you know, would be thief didn't know what that was, then he could have hung up the phone knowing his mom wasn't in danger.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, like a lot of us have, you know, like my mother was like, let's all get on Life 360. And I hemmed and hawed and put that off for like years. And then finally I was like, I really don't care. And so if I really wanted to, I could go on Life 360 and see where my mother and both of my sisters are at this point and know how charged their phones are, because one of my sisters is
how fast they're driving.
Infamous for and how fast she's driving, and one of my sisters is infamous for getting down to about 10% and like living there on her cell phone.
So if a hacker calls, pull up Life 360.
Yeah, I'm like,
mom's
not
at home.
Yeah, she's at home. We're, you know, but but you never, like, there's all sorts of like situations that could be posed where just having a code word is
recommended.
Great advice. Yeah.
Mine's pina colada.
Well, now you got to change it.
Crap.
Is there anything sometimes in dealing with clients of all ages, non-specific to age, at banks specifically, we gather a lot of personal information and we have to. Sometimes, occasionally, there's resistance, whether it's just giving it to someone verbally, in person, over the phone, over email, copies of driver's licenses, financial statements.
Sure.
We're pulling credit reports. We're doing a lot of things with people's data. And obviously, we're very careful and protective with it. But sometimes, me personally have experienced pushback that is almost like, that doesn't even matter. Like, do you have examples of things that are almost like overly extreme in terms of protecting your information, or is everything on the table and I shouldn't judge?
No, I went to a new dentist. I was recommended to go to this dentist to look at, you know, a root canal that I had a few years ago. And they're like, can we make a copy of your driver's license? And can you fill out this form that has my social on it? I'm like, why do you need my social?
And
why do you need my driver's license?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if I'm paying my bill right now.
Right.
So it's not like you have to come back for collections later. And how are you storing my information? Because you're a dental practice. You're not a security practice, right? Mm-hmm. You're a bank. At least you have security measures in place. However, we would like to say that for Chase and Target and Home Depot, and the list goes on and on, AT&T, right?
Sure.
Like, all this information is out there. So the issue is that the companies typically aren't protecting those individuals. And so you're taking a risk anytime you're uploading that information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really, it is a risk that we have to take, right? We're not going to say that our password's pineapple and publish that on a podcast, right? Like, we're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to go to our accountant. We have to give them our W-2s, our 1099s. They have our socials and our kids and everything else, right? But now, thankfully, the FTC safeguards rule is stepping in to, like, accountants and, you know, title companies and other companies that are housing our data. And they're saying, you have to protect this, because that's what the FTC was built for, protecting our information and our data. And they haven't updated that in almost 100 years, right? And then there's some regulations that were changed a few years ago, but it wasn't around the cyber stuff. So they're getting stronger on that. Then you have the healthcare, which is HIPAA. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a HIPAA compliance issue or an incident, it's a slap on the wrist. There's no teeth. With the FTC safeguards, gross negligence is up to 5 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And there's fines. So if a CPA where a title company has an incident, now the FTC is going to step in, they're going to investigate the incident, and then they're going to give them a fine. That has teeth. So what needs to happen is anywhere that is collecting this information, there needs to be regulatory compliance in place. And even in my industry, as sad as it is, today there's no compliance standards in place for IT professionals. So it's the wild, wild west.
Yikes.
It depends on who you hire and what their thoughts are on security and how they want to protect it. And if they're not security focused, then you really want to have that conversation around them. And if they come to you and say, hey, security is optional, you know, you can have this package or this package that has the security, you have to think, is that really somebody I want supporting me if security is optional? Mm-hmm. And so the information that you're giving these people, I second guess and question people all the time. Do you really need that? Do you need a copy of my driver's license and why? And then even like Airbnb, you rent Airbnb from some properties, mm-hmm. and they'll say, hey, we need to verify you. Can you text us your driver's license? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to text you my driver's license. That's insecure. So we, as a consumer, we have to be mindful and educate ourselves on the dangers of giving our information to somebody we don't know and trust. That host that's hosting that Airbnb, I don't know them. I don't know where they live. I have no recourse to go after them if they get, you know, compromised. If they got compromised, I promise they'll never tell me, mm-hmm. right? And so to your point is second guess, should I give this information up? How are you storing the data? And can I see what your IT policies look like? And if they don't have that, then I'd just say, sorry, I'm not going to give you my information. I promise you, you guys have regulatory compliance. You mm-hmm. have policies, procedures in place. 2FA is verified. Everything here, your IT guy, the reason he doesn't have time to do other things is because he's busy protecting the client's data.
Right.
He's busy protecting the data of all of your clients. Right?
Well, earlier he protected me from some spiders. So he's, you know, all around, he's working hard.
He's multi-talented. For sure.
I like to picture Jason as a mother albatross in a nest, and the eggs are the data. And he is... He goes out to periodically collect the things that the data needs. Yeah, but he's like a mama bird protecting the data in the nest.
He's very protective.
Vivid imagery. Thank you, Matt, for that.
I'm also so curious how the dental office responded to your request.
Yes.
Why do you need my driver's license and can I see your IT security policy?
It wasn't mandatory.
It
wasn't mandatory. I had already paid them.
I could see needing your, like, dental insurance card, but the driver's license is like do you need to know, like, that I'm why do you need to know that I'm licensed to drive?
Transport myself to my appointments?
Yeah.
I'm not illegal.
Even then you can just flash it. You don't have to take a copy of it, you know, if that's what they're getting after. Uh-huh. Anyway, that's sure. very interesting. Well, I guess in the sense of, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, your people are sort of your weakest link. What are some, I know there's a lot of, like, password apps and things out there that people are using. What would be some of your recommendations for having these long, complex passwords, but keeping them somewhere that you can actually, like, access and remember what it was?
Sure, sure. So there's several different products out there. I don't have one that I say, oh, I love this product. Each one has its own little quirks. LastPass has had a couple of incidents.
Okay.
Those passwords were encrypted. So today the vault hasn't been broken as of yet. But LastPass is what I used for years. And it asks you for the master password. And once you have put in the master password, then you can scroll through and see the other information that's in there. The great thing about using a password manager is that if you have duplicate passwords, it's going to notify you and say, hey, you have duplicate passwords. So it teaches you password hygiene. Don't reuse the same password on any two sites, no matter what.
Okay.
And then the other thing is the auto-generated passwords are very long and complex, and that's what you want from a password standpoint. We had some password cracking software a few years back talking about ongoing training. And how do you, you know, beat the system? And we would create passwords and then dump it into this program to see how long it would take. And the more complex the password it was, the longer it would take. And some passwords we put in there, we let it run for like 3 weeks and it never found all the characters. Mm-hmm. It found a few of the characters, but it didn't find them all. But, you know, a lot of people use very weak passwords, mm-hmm. you know, things that they
I love my dog 67. Yeah.
Asterisk.
Yeah. Or password, or 123.
Or a 3 instead of an E, right? Like, I mean, the password guessers are going to automatically do that. They're automatically going to fill those in. The A's are at's, you know.
Uh-huh. The I's are exclamation marks. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not that I've ever done that.
Yeah. Sure. Of course not.
And I definitely have different passwords for every application.
Everything.
Every single thing.
Well, so I guess, how do you feel about like the, because my my husband and I are two different views on this. So he has a password manager on his phone, and he'll, whenever he sets a password, he just like looks at things around him and pulls a few words and then adds a couple numbers. And then he stores it in the password manager. And I am someone who loves that Safari will automatically generate a password for me and then store it so that the next time I go in, it's automatically going to input my username and password. And a lot of the like financial websites, you know, they have the dual factor authentication, that sort of mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. But I guess, what are your thoughts on those two models, if you will?
Well, as long as he's not using this one and that one.
Oh, right?
If it's something random every single time.
Yeah, he's got a bookshelf and there's like a bookshelf in his office, and he'll just pick a couple random words from titles and like author names and just throw a couple words together.
Yeah, it's okay as long as it's long and it has extra characters in it.
Okay.
The way you're using Safari tells me that you're a Mac user. So you're already like iPhone. Letting the world know. Number two. You cut that part out.
Yeah. The web browser.
I have waited for this moment
for
so long as a not Mac user.
Number two, you don't store your passwords in the browser. Because if the browser keeps that in there and I steal your token, your security token, and then I say that I'm you and I dump that into my Mac and my Safari, now I have all your passwords.
Even if the security token is like is biometric?
If the security token is tied to that password in that browser, then that security token is there. Even with Microsoft, Microsoft, we have tokens that can be stolen. And so we tell people this is the most critical reason you want that multi-factor authentication.
Okay.
And you want to log out if you're not using a site. So log out of it, you know, exit out of it, and then don't store your passwords in the browser. That's what the password manager's for.
Yeah.
You can have the plugin and click on the plugin, authenticate using your master password, and then have it fill in the form.
Wow.
All right. Don't store it in the browser. And that's Windows or Mac. Doesn't matter. Don't use your browser to store your passwords.
Interesting.
Because they can both be compromised.
Okay. Well, I got to tell Nick he wins.
Oh, crap.
For the
I
most
have some
part.
Stuff to do.
Well,
this weekend.
I like that you're using.
You just gave me some chores, Charles. Yeah.
I know, but I like that you're using the random password generator.
Yeah.
Right? Because it is. It's very random.
Uh huh.
Where yours is a lot of characters and strings, and he's using words.
And his are long. I will, like, I've seen some of them, and I'm like,
that's the time.
Especially if you're typing it, like, it'll be something we're trying to log in, like on the TV, and I'm like, you know, using the remote, and I'm like, oh my God. 3 hours from now, we'll be watching this movie.
Yeah. Well, long passwords are great. Yeah. They are harder to crack, but if it's just simple words, then it would be easier versus your characters.
Gotcha.
Right? So you're both right.
Yeah.
So, you know.
All right.
You get the prize.
Love that.
Well, he wins on the password manager side. I'll have to let him know.
Yeah. You definitely need a password manager.
I was just afraid. I always was afraid to use them because I'm like, I don't know mm-hmm. who the company is that has this, that runs the password manager, you know?
Yes, but the data that you store is encrypted. And so they can't actually see your passwords.
I gotcha.
It's encrypted in their vault. And each person that's using this has their own little private vault, right? And that's where that information is. And then some password managers actually have a vault inside of that. So you can put other stuff like your, you know, your social and bank account information, other, items that you can get to. You know, I keep my EIN number because I hate to ask my bookkeeper every time I need it, what is it? And I don't want to keep it in an email, right? Mm-hmm. So I keep that stored in the vault. Mm. Now, the other thing, the one thing that I like about LastPass is that it has a backup account, meaning you can give somebody else access to that account.
Oh.
So because I run a business,
you got
I don't want to be the only one that had access to that. And if I'm flying around the country and end up not being able to, they don't have access to my phone and something happens to me, then what happens is, you know, I have an authorized person that can gain access to my LastPass. Mm. I am notified and I can set a timeout. I can say they will, once they authenticate, they'll have 30 minutes before they can actually see it. And so it's a, it's a fail safe. So if I get a notification saying this person accessed my vault, then I can call them up and say, hey, what's going on?
Uh-huh.
And I have time to lock them out.
Gotcha.
All right. So we want to make sure we're doing that. And, you know, as businesses, whether you're a small business or large business, you need to have the tabletop exercises and walking through what would happen in a disaster, as well as that incident response plan. So one of the tabletops that we did was what happens if Charles dies? He's unconscious. He's in a coma. You know, we got 20 some odd employees and what happens next, right? So my son has check writing privileges, you know, my family has check writing privileges so that in the event that something happens, the business doesn't just stop. Mm-hmm. And as entrepreneurs, we need to remember that, like, we can't hold the keys to everything. We need to be able to say, what's the contingency plan?
Sure.
Even for our families.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So as endlessly fascinating as this is, and I could have the entire podcast about my random information security questions.
Same.
I want to pivot a little bit more to Charles, the individual.
Sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but in terms of kind of doing some of my due diligence before our chat today, it looks like, were you an employee at Nashville Computer before you were an owner?
I was.
Okay. Yeah. Would you want to? Can you talk about that journey from kind of employee to owner and how that came about?
Sure. I started in 1991 as a part-time employee.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted somebody to work in the morning.
Okay.
And I was
doing what, by the way? Like, most people didn't have like personal computers.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were assembling computers. We were putting them together. We'd have the case, the motherboard. The SIPs that go in, the big, huge hard drives that would go in there, and then we'd have to configure the drive. So that's what they were looking for somebody to do. I was going to ITT at the time in the mornings, and so I convinced them that it would be better if I worked in the afternoon because shipments come in. I could unbox stuff and then assemble it, and then anything I didn't get finished, I could leave it running for, you know, the guy to come in the morning to finish. So I convinced them to hire me. And I worked there part-time for probably 3 or 4 months. And then I went on full-time and had graduated school at that time. Working through that, we got to see the internet come to play, mm-hmm. right? Bulletin boards were there. You could download games and stuff.
You've got
and then,
mail.
And then email came along.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this, I mean, I'm talking like I was back in the day before all of that. And so watching all this evolve through the years, I was able to, you know, gain more knowledge and become more educated. And then I worked with a lot of smart people. I worked with a lot of different companies that were doing networking and security and different things along the way. And so we started adopting and adapting to all those different changes through the technology. When the company was originally started in 1988, they were selling Mass 90 accounting software.
I don't even know what that is.
What is
the
Sage? They call it Sage today.
Okay.
And so it's an accounting software, like similar to QuickBooks, but it's for larger businesses.
Gotcha.
And the problem was nobody had computers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got into selling computers. And that's really what stuck.
We'll solve this problem.
Yeah. You need a computer to go with that software we just sold you.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll give you the software and the computer.
Yeah. And so through the years, you know, it evolved. I mean, I worked as a technician, you know, doing the on calls, doing help desk, doing phone support. And then, you know, I mean, we started getting cell phones. Back in the day, we'd have a pager and somebody had an emergency. They'd text you with a 911. You'd call back to the office and ask them what it was. You know, so you had to keep quarters for the pay phones. I mean, it's so ridiculous when you think back now some of the things that we went through and what we have today that we just take advantage of.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely.
It's a convenience, but we take advantage of it. We don't realize what's there. But as I progressed, we started focusing on security. How do we better protect people? You know, back you used to get, you know, like the Michelangelo virus would happen on, I think it was March 6th. And we'd have to go out and clean up computers after March 6th because that was the only day that the virus activated on. And
gosh.
Yeah. What? And so check Wikipedia. You can read about it. But it's evolved to where we're having to actively scan for things. And then spyware was the big thing, right? It's like that party line that your grandmother used to have where they're listening in on your conversations, which we still kind of have today on our cell phones, right? Like some of these softwares are listening in to our conversations. That's why we see an ad pop up. And so
it's Google Home or the Amazon, Amazon one?
Alexa.
Alexa. Yeah.
I almost said Asterix. That's like the little robot thing that Amazon has. Yeah.
So it's, as technology's evolved, I've had to evolve and start looking at like what's next, what's coming. And that's why we've adopted to AI even today. Mm-hmm. We use AI throughout our organization, the company. We use it for like level one help desk tickets. If you call our after hours, it's an AI bot. It's they call it Sam. I call it Sam AIM.
Ha.
So, you know, they play on words, Sam AIM. But
that's cute.
Sam will actually ask you, you know, your first name, last name, phone number, why are you calling? And then he'll attempt to troubleshoot your problem. And give you steps to take to resolve the problem.
Wow.
And if you can't resolve the problem, then he'll go ahead and create a ticket in our ticketing system, give you the ticket number and ask, do you want me to repeat that ticket number to you so you can write it down? Because he speaks a little bit faster than
way
we do.
Way to go, Sam.
Yeah, Sam. And and then Sam will text all the engineers and he'll send an email to all the engineers with the ticket number and his notes of what he did to troubleshoot the issue. And so it's, you know, I mean, it's putting AI to use. You know, we've evolved from the old days of, you know, carrying floppy drives around to using AI to help us solve computer problems and onboard and offboard clients.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you think Sam has had any conversations with other AI assistants in that weird AI language that they always see? Those videos that go viral, they seem to wind up speaking to each other?
No, Sam. Right now, Sam is isolated. Unless an AI bot called.
That's what I mean.
Right now, he has not had that conversation. I've had more weird conversations where don't ask me why, 2 a.m, somebody called our after hours, and it was two guys bickering over who was going to get tech support first. And I'm like, they wasted 10 minutes of, you know, this person's life.
Oh my gosh.
Bickering. And, you know, I'm like, why is that even a thing?
Yeah.
Maybe they were drinking or whatever.
I could see them
having a real good time with Sam. You know,
just giving him the most complicated questions like making
to see if he can
jokes and seeing how he responds.
That's
so not nice. They're going to remember that.
Can he answer multiple calls at a time?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how did you get comfortable with that in terms of trusting Sam AI to like not like, cause usually if someone's calling an after hours helpline, they're having an issue, they're probably already frustrated. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get comfortable with Sam that he's not going to make that worse? Mm-hmm.
Lots of testing.
Okay.
So if you call in to, let's say that you missed your flight and you call American or Southwest and you're in the airport and you get that automated message, right?
You want to throw your phone.
You want to throw your phone, but the problem is the intercom comes on in the background. It's like, I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Oh.
Well, Sam doesn't do that. So you can walk into a crowded bar or a nightclub, whatever. You can call Sam and he's going to talk to you and avoids the outside noise.
Interesting.
And so he asks first name, last name, phone number. And then he verifies that information. And then he asks, what's your problem? He verifies the problem. Then he starts asking, do you want me to help you troubleshoot this? And if you say, no, I just want to talk to somebody, he'll say, okay, let me get your ticket number for you. Can I create a ticket for you? Yes or no, and they say yes, and then the ticket, he reads you the ticket number. And so we did a lot of testing, and I have to say that some of the AI bots didn't fare so well. But, you know, the bots can handle multiple calls at a time, and some companies are using them for outbound like calling mm-hmm. to leave messages and voicemails and things of that nature. And they can make like 1,000 calls in a minute.
Oh, so my God.
It is massive.
I got one amounts of calls. Last night. It was an appointment confirmation, but it was, you know,
mm-hmm. oh, yeah.
Hello, your appointment is Tuesday at blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, yeah, this whole thing.
Exactly.
And it's probably doing that at, you know, 5 p.m. when they close and everybody that's 5 days out and just.
And it's probably done in 5 minutes.
Yeah. How did you know, you mentioned going to ITT for school.
Mm-hmm.
What was your path in leading to wanting to go into, whether it was IT, security, maybe you didn't know. Did you have kind of a path in mind for, you know, how you wanted to use your education?
Sure. So we're. How did I get on that path is mm-hmm. what you're asking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going way back now.
Yeah.
So I was raised on a farm, and we had to get well water out of
a
the well.
A farm in Tennessee? Or
yeah, okay. West Tennessee. And, I mean, it was rural Tennessee with well water and the whole works.
So you could be considered, back then, off the grid?
We had electric.
Okay.
But we burned wood, and we used the water from the... the well and the cistern for bathing and things. So I worked on the farm, hauling hay, starting around 13, 14 years old, driving a tractor, doing those things. And I watched my brothers working in factories. And after high school, I said, you know, I'm going to take a year off. I don't want to go to school. I've been in school my whole life. So I took a year off. The recruiter told me it was the worst decision of my life because I'd never go to school and make anything out of myself.
Oh, that's
I said,
nice.
Okay,
that's
I'll take
kind.
That chance.
Yeah, that's
you
good.
Know. So I went to work at a factory, working third shift, making radiators for land movers. So these radiators were large enough to park like 2 full-size SUVs on. Like they're huge, massive devices. Well, a machine ran the drill press for that. And so it would drill hundreds of holes in this metal. And when the machine would break, it was run by an IBM computer, the tech would come out. And so I got to know the tech very well because in 86, 87, the machine broke a lot. And so he was there a lot and he was working on the computer and he was talking about traveling all over. He goes to all these different manufacturers and fixes their computer and reprograms it and does that. So I really got my interest from that. And he was telling me how many computers that he was responsible for taking care of. And I thought, wow, this is the way, you know, this is evolving to. A lot of industry is going to start using computers.
Mm-hmm.
They need guys like that to go out and fix the computers because mm-hmm. he was so backlogged in getting to his next job. You know, people were waiting and it was causing downtime.
Mm-hmm.
And he said nobody was taking that trade. And mm-hmm. I said, you know what? That would be a great career path to start learning more about computers. And that's when I moved to Nashville, went to ITT and joined Nashville Computer.
Wow, you like saw the future unfolding.
I saw that there was a need
sure.
in the future.
Sure.
And I think that's what we need to do, you know, with anything new that we see, right? Like we see machines are coming. We see things are happening. We see AI is here. We can either adapt or fall behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so why not adapt? You know, go ahead and just say, look, it's here. Let me embrace it. Learn what I can about it and then do what I can moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to struggle less if you embrace it than you will if you're fighting it for the rest of your...
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how did the opportunity come about to become the owner of Nashville Computer?
Sure. So I worked for Kerry Couch. He was the founder, started in 88. I worked with him for, I want to say it was 27, 28 years. And, it was probably about 25 years. And... we're having lunch one day and he kept saying that he wanted to sell the business. And I said, well, when are you going to sell the business? He said, well, you know, maybe when my kids get out of college. I said, well, it was when my kids graduate, when my kids get in college, when they get married. I said, you don't look like you're ever going to sell the business. And he said, well, you know, he said, keep growing it and, you know, eventually I'll sell it. And I said, well, if I keep growing the business, I won't be able to afford to buy it. And so I was like, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, shooting myself in the foot by growing the business.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I was doing a lot of sales and marketing and really bringing on a lot of new clients and, you know, fixing operations and things. And the business was doing really well. And he said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do is he said, what if I start making you a partner? He said, I'll make you the, a partner in the business And you'll start out with some shares and you'll have like a 20% ownership after 4 years. And I said, okay, well, let's do that. And so he put me in charge of the business and, you know, set me up to that, which was great because that was successful. He had a grandson come along and he said, you know, this is, you know, I'm wanting to spend more time with family and things of that nature. And he said, I think I'm really ready to retire and get out of the business. And unfortunately, he came down with cancer. Mm-hmm. And so it was, let's work this out. Let's make this happen. And we were able to close. I bought his shares of the business prior to his unfortunate passing.
Oh.
And so with that, his legacy is still there. His son works for us. We still have a lot of the things that he put in place, the foundations, the core values. We're an EPIC family, and our core values spell out EPIC, and then we're family first. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what he built, I spent more time with him than I did my parents. Wow. And so everything that I've learned from him about the culture of the business remains in the business today, and that comes first. We have employees. I've been there 33 years. One gentleman was 20 years, two guys are 18 years each. Oh. Another one was a client for 14 years, and now he's been with us for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
On staff. So it's we're like a big, happy family. Another one that used to be a client of ours, she came on. She's been with us 10 years.
Wow.
And so, it's longevity in our people. We're celebrating like 6-year anniversary, 8-year anniversaries of other people. And then we have some, you know, newer people that have only been there like 1 year, 2 years.
Sure.
How many employees did you say you had?
We have 27.
20. Okay.
There's some similarities with Innsbank there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have one of our...
more employees, but very similar values just in terms of, you know...
And the longevity and...
Yeah. One of our RMs just hit his 20-year mark. And okay. I mean, he started here as an intern.
What's an RM?
Oh, sorry, relationship manager, okay. The loan officer, yeah.
Bank stuff.
Sorry.
I try not to throw any acronyms out, you know, IT geek speak, so.
And I didn't even think about it, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We have some, and I think like, what, 6 people are here from when we like were founded?
First founded.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
We're 25 years old this year.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, yeah. Hobby Lobby used to be our client.
Oh, okay.
And those trains... messed with their printing and network all the time that run through here.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, we had the worst nightmare working on the IT
trains.
Equipment in this
the
old
star train.
In this building.
Wow. You
know, yeah. So
that's hilarious. What?
Yeah. It was partly their equipment too, you know, being the age that it was.
Sure. Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, wow. I don't know if you knew this place, what it was before you guys moved in. But yeah. Well,
so fun fact is, my boss, so we've made a couple of movies, like, you know, they're obviously not like, you know,
they're definitely B or C. Level.
They're not like MGM, you know, Warner Brothers. We're not talking about like big, you know, we've had some fun with it. And our CEO, has wrote the scripts and, you know, they're just kind of like one of them was a satire on horrible bosses, and we called it Horrible Bankers. And,
okay.
And so I can't remember which one it was, but when they were demoing Hobby Lobby, like they had all the equipment on site, and it just so worked out that my boss, our chief credit officer, was able to run the like wrecking ball machine into the building, and we got it on film and put it in one of our movies, like worked it into a movie. And so he jokes that it was the best day of his life, even including the birth of his children and like his marriage to his wife. And I don't know if he's joking.
I don't think he's joking.
I don't know. Hitting something with a wrecking ball would be high ranking.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's better than my children, but you know.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't say better than his children. He just said, you know, like that day. Yeah. That day could trump the birth of his. Yeah. So,
So where do we see these movies? Are they online?
YouTube? That's for internal use.
Because we've premiered. We premiered the last one at the movie theater in Green Hills.
Like, oh, when they first
like the, it was the, I think that it was the third one. That was, it was right before me as well. And so, it must have been like 2017 because I was here in 20, I got here in 2018. And so
I can follow up and send you some links to them. You know, okay. these are unrated. For maximum fun.
Unrated, yeah.
Yeah, fun is the priority not of those projects, PC. So they are unrated, so they are not publicly available anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Nor all should right. they be.
Well, if you should ever...
We'll trust your security protocol, yeah. Charles, yeah. And that you won't be our leak.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'll have to make sure if Matt sends me a link, I'll have to call him and say, did you really send this to me?
Uh-huh.
Is this safe to click on?
Yeah. Of course, I did.
You'll have to come up with a code word before
pineapple.
You leave.
Yeah.
Just to be sure. You're the previous owner of the company.
Mm-hmm. Carrie.
Carrie. Was he someone that you looked at as not only probably your boss, but a mentor? And what were some of the things that you learned from him during your career?
Well, yeah, I mean, he was like a father figure. I mean, I have my parents and, you know, they lived in West Tennessee, but working with him every day, you know, coming in every morning, he'd say, hey, Charlie, come see me when you get a minute. That was his favorite line. You know, every morning he'd tell me that. And then I'd go up and sit in his office and we'd chat and talk about different things. What I learned is take care of people. Ask, what can I do to help you? Mm-hmm. Nurture the people that we have, and then take care of clients. But most importantly, take care of the people that take care of those clients. And he would do things. I used to say he's such a tightwad because he would say, hey, they'll charge us $60. Call them and get that refunded. You know, it's $20 in shipping that we shouldn't have paid because the amount was over this. And he would find little nitpicky things where it's like, hey, you know, we got billed twice for this and it was $37. Let's get that refunded. And then when it came time for Christmas, he would go to, like, you know, the warehouse store down here in Hundred Oaks, and he would buy, you know, 200 jackets and bicycles and all this stuff, and, you know, as donations. And he would give that out. And then when it came time for Christmas at the office, we do Dirty Santa. Mm-hmm. And he'd probably spend $2,000 or $3,000 on gifts. And then we'd do Dirty Santa. Like, you know, everybody goes around, they get mm-hmm. a gift, they pick a number, and then somebody can steal the gift from the mm-hmm. other person. And so, and like, you would think like he was a tightwad, but at the end of the day, the money he was watching spend inside the business, he would use to help other people
yeah.
and give back to the community and things. I can't tell you how many computers went to like Lighthouse Christian Academy and different churches and organizations. You know, it'd be like, hey, I need you to build up these 5 machines and, you know, we're donating them over here to this organization. And so he was very giving, but if you just looked at one side of it, you'd think, man, this guy's a Scrooge,
yeah.
right? But that's something that I learned from him. And then I remember he promoted a young lady into sales. And he gave her like $500 in cash and said, hey, go get you some new shoes, some new clothes, you know, update your wardrobe a little bit. Because if you want to be out there selling, I want you to feel good about what you're wearing. Mm-hmm. I've watched him take somebody that their car was repossessed and he went and got it paid up to date and paid the tow bill and had the car brought over to the office.
Wow.
Right. Oh, like, I mean, it's genuinely taking care of the people that work with us.
Yeah.
And it's just so many acts of kindness that I saw that he would never want people to know that he did. And something that I like to do, and I don't do this as much as I should, but like if somebody's going on vacation and I know that they've had like some expenses and things, like just slip them a little cash and just mm-hmm. say, hey, you know, for your vacation, have a good time. And it's not on the payroll. It's not, you know, tax money, stuff like that. And so it's just helping out, you know, and sure. doing little things for
kindness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For your, you know, little acts of kindness. You primarily do it for that. And then you do it for your clients as well. Mm-hmm. So I ran into a client last night at the Sounds game. And one of the ladies there, the office lady that was there and with her husband and her daughter. And the husband said, yeah, I've never been able to catch a baseball. And, And the daughter said, yeah, I want a baseball, you know, and I'm sitting over behind the dugout and they throw balls all night long. So, mm-hmm. I got a ball, took it over to her and she was just like elated. Right. Aww. Like it's the little things that you can do. And you think about, you know, listen to what people say and then you can take action on those little things. And the one thing that I'll say about Kerry is he was a phenomenal listener. And so if you listen to somebody, he would take note of it. And one of the things that I do is if I know somebody's having surgery, I'll go into my calendar and I'll put it down at 5, 6 a.m. to text them. Say, hey, I'm thinking about you today.
Yeah.
I'm not going to remember that. I'm going to wake up. I'm going to go on about my day and be like, oh, crap, I forgot. So it's being mindful of what people are saying, what people are going through, anything that they're having, going on in their life. One of the things that we do now that we've done for years is we have cards that we keep at the office. And the latest one, somebody had, I think their mother-in-law passed away or something. So there's a card in the office and everybody signs it. If somebody's graduating or if they have a new baby or a new grandkid, something like that, we listen to what is happening in our environment, right? In our clients. And our guys come back and they'll say, hey, Brenda, can you get a card for so-and-so because they're having knee surgery or they're having this problem or this is what they just experienced, right? And it's, we send those cards to those people. And so that's something that I learned from Kerry is just be mindful of what people are saying, be attentive to what they're saying. And if there's something that you can do, no matter how small it is, even if it's a text message with encouragement, send that text message.
Yeah, the unexpected nature of it, even if it's small, makes it feel bigger to the person who's receiving it, for sure.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, the key is when you hear it, write it down, take action, put it in your phone, schedule it.
Have Siri remind you.
Yeah.
Another example of Apple. Sorry, Matt.
Well, that's definitely great advice.
Mm-hmm.
Something we certainly try to do, but... yeah, I'm going to file that one as a homework assignment to myself.
The director of people, people engagement.
Yeah.
Crap, I just forgot your title.
It's okay.
Is that it?
It changes by the
Employee engagement. That's it. I just think of you as like the people's R.
Yeah.
Well, you can go into AI and tell it whatever you want, and then it can create a certificate for you.
Exactly.
So you can have whatever title you like.
Certificate of whatever I want.
Oh, okay.
Wait, I have a question that you might have an opinion on. As you may have picked up from my constant being ridiculed by these two and everyone else, I have a Samsung phone.
Aggressive.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah, great. Here.
Here we go.
Never mind. Actually, I think all the batteries and the cameras are dying. Uh-oh.
What's your question?
They look plugged in.
Oh, no. No, but anyway... one of the things that it's not a reason that I have a Samsung phone, but I guess it's a perk that they do. They have fingerprint scanners still on the screen as like a biometric security measure.
Sure.
I personally like that. I like it better than the face identification. I don't use the face one. I like the fingerprint one. Do you have thoughts around that technology, positive or negative?
Yeah, I mean... The thing is, it goes back to Kristen. Mm-hmm. Kristen said earlier of like, what information am I going to give to somebody? Mm-hmm. Why does the dentist need my driver's license? Why does Samsung need your fingerprint? I understand it's convenience, but your fingerprint, guess how many people share that with you?
Just me, right?
Just you. And so your fingerprint is in that phone. Who has access to that?
Just me.
Are you sure?
It's unless a Samsung
phone.
You sure unless about that?
Have you read the terms and conditions? Let's talk about that, not from just a Samsung standpoint. Copilot. People are using Copilot with Office 365.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got Microsoft Word. You open it up. You're typing a document. You come up with this great training program. Guess who has access to that? Microsoft. Unless you go in and you turn that off, that you don't want them to have that content.
In terms of like training data to train Copilot or
training, they have access to training data. They have access to your full data, and it goes back to even Google back in the day. You probably remember the funny commercials where the mailman was walking around reading people's mail, and that was Microsoft's take on Gmail, because Gmail was reading the emails and then marketing to you based on stuff that you had conversations with people. And so my question always is Samsung, Android, iPhone, it's what information are you putting in there? And have you read the conditions of what they're doing with it? I mean, even a Zoom call is going to go out of the country. And who knows who can pick that up unless you go into Zoom and you change the security settings and say, I only want this in US. And then the best thing to do is obviously use a VPN where all of your information is encrypted as it's sent over the internet, right? So the best thing to do is have safety in mind. Now, does that mean don't use the fingerprint scanner? No. Okay. But, you know, the question is, you know, why, what security settings do I have on my phone that could relinquish that information? Okay. And, you know, we look at, and it's unfortunate because a lot of these things are, you know, we're looking at security in a rearview mirror. Snapchat said that they were going to delete the pictures, right? They're gone in 24 hours. Well, Snapchat wasn't actually deleting them. They were just off your phone, but they still had access to it. You know, Uber had their issue where they were looking at the photos on your phone. The Ring camera, you had employees watching your Ring camera at Amazon.
Wait a second. Can we back up to Uber? Looking at photos on our phone?
So Uber had the Uber app had access to your phone's data, the data on your phone. And that was because you agreed that you would give them access because you scrolled through that, you know, 15-page EULA and said, yes, I agree. I want to use this application. And so part of that was we may look at data to see if it can make it for a better experience or whatever reasons. And then they have since obviously turned that off. There's also, you know, like when you install a new app, it's going to ask you, hey, this app, you know, like Instagram, for instance, Instagram comes up and it says, hey, Instagram wants to be able to access all of your USB devices on your network.
Why?
Right, not USB devices. The Bluetooth devices. Right. So it comes up and it says, "Hey, we want to access all the Bluetooth devices on your network. Is that okay?" No, it's not okay for Instagram to have access to that because I may have microphones that are Bluetooth. I may have speakers. I may have other things. I don't want it to access that data and that information. And so I'm sorry you kind of opened a can of worms there with the fingerprint question.
That's exactly the point of this.
He started it. I always look at it, you know, I mean, unfortunately, we see a lot of things happen in the rearview mirror and then we make adjustments moving forward. It's like home routers used to have a username and password imprinted on the bottom and they used to all be the same. Well, you know, the problem with that was once you gained access to somebody's Wi-Fi,
right?
Because it was free. I mean, we used to just pull up in, you know, in a church or a neighborhood and just connect to Wi-Fi and then start browsing files and see what was on people's computers because we could.
Wow.
Right?
And so you did?
Yes. Sorry. you know, I mean,
thoughts and prayers.
As an engineer, you know, you want to know how to better protect people. Well, you know, I mean, I was meeting with this guy one day in a business. And he said, I've got all the security I need. And I said, well, when I get back to the office, I'm going to drop a file on your desktop. And he's like, yeah, you can't do that. So I went back to the office, you know, remoted into his IP address and hit his you know, IP of his machine and the $C sign back then. And there's all his files. And so I just went and browsed to his profile, went to his desktop, created a new folder, dumped a couple of files in there and said, I told you, you know. And then, you know, they were there and he called me later and he's like, well, how do I stop that from happening?
You hired me.
I was like, oh, that's now you want to talk.
That is such a gangster sales pitch.
It really is.
Yeah, that is.
You know, the thing is, you know, it's people don't believe that they should take security serious. And the thing is like, well, that's not going to happen to me. And why would somebody want to target me? And it goes back to the ransom email that says, pay me $500 or I'm going to contact everybody in your contacts. Number one, they don't have access to your contacts. They don't have access to anything. All they saw was your password was on the dark web. And they knew that password belonged to that email address. So they emailed that email address with the password saying, I have compromised your system. Well, they really haven't. They know the information that was leaked by AT&T or some other service, right? MSN, Yahoo, whatever it was, whoever it was that leaked our data. Now they're using that to exploit you and say, I have access to your systems, but you don't.
Yeah.
So people that say, well, you know, I don't care. I don't have anything on my machine. I'd like to just warn them that your machine could be used as a bot to attack a U.S. company. Because one of the things that we do in our firewalls is we block all countries except for the U.S. So nobody from the outside of the U.S. can gain access to that system, even through the VPN. However, if you have a home computer and you don't care anything about security, and a would-be threat actor, hacker, takes over that machine, and it's based here in the U.S., now it can attack our business that we're protecting. And so even this bank, the IT guy probably has it set up to where nobody outside the U.S. can log in unless they use a VPN. Yeah.
No, we, not even with a VPN. That's how we get vacations around here.
If we go out of the country, well, he deactivates our, like, we
yeah,
don't
no
exist.
Email, no Teams. And, like, for a day or two, you're like, I feel like I'm missing an arm. And then afterwards, you're like, whoa, this is nice.
This is what vacation is supposed to be.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we have, I mean, our the software tools that we use allow us to allow logins from those countries. So when I was out in Scotland, Ireland, England, touring and visiting Amsterdam, I was like, I needed to approve payroll. So I had to communicate with, you know, with my security guy. And I'm like, okay, here's my dates of travel. Here's the countries I'm going to. And this is, you know, where I'm going to need access. And so I was able to gain access to that. When I was in Ethiopia and I needed to wire money, that was a different story.
That sounds sketchy.
Yeah, that's...
That is sketchy because I needed to wire money to a vendor.
And you were legitimately in Ethiopia? This isn't... Okay, I thought you were saying, like,
no.
like a fake
was
Charles
prince.
Was, like,
no,
you know...
No,
yeah, the Prince
Charles.
Of Nigeria was hitting up Nashville
I spent a month between there and Nairobi.
Oh, wow.
And what I did is I had to VPN into the office. And our VPN even has two-factor authentication. So we authenticate into there, and then I was able to access the bank account and do what I needed to do. But, you know, it's that taking that privacy of whether it's a thumbprint or facial recognition or installing an app and just scrolling through and saying, I agree. We have to think as a consumer, what information am I just giving out there? Because big data is a billion-dollar industry, and they want to sell our data. And so they want to listen in. They want to know that we're looking for a new coffee maker or, you know, we're having a new grandbaby. You know, Target has figured out, like, if you go into a Target and you're shopping, your credit card is tagged to an ID that they have on you. And what they've understood is that if they have free Wi-Fi in Target, and they have a young lady walking in there and she's in her first trimester and she's walking through the baby aisles looking at things and making her registry, they're going to start targeting her because they have big data. They have access to the information. She's using their Wi-Fi. She's in that area of the store.
That's so convenient.
I know it sounds scary, but this is the reality of where we are. And this has been happening for years. Then you start getting the pamphlets. And I used this in one of my seminars was, you know, Target was emailing or mailed a pamphlet to this girl's home address, and the dad got it. And he's like calling Target and saying, why the hell are you advertising my daughter all this baby stuff? Little did he know she was actually pregnant. And so Target knew that she was pregnant before she told her dad that she was pregnant.
It's so uncomfortable.
And so don't use free Wi-Fi. You know,
I did just see a whole thing about that on, I'm trying to remember where, that, like, basically, yeah, because, you know, you go to, like, had
hotels,
a doctor's appointment today, and when you get in there,
stores,
something about the building, I have, like, a bar, and then it's like, well, free Wi-Fi, and you got to check in on the website, and you're like,
yep, it's a whole thing. That's scary.
It's called a VPN.
So I have two more questions. So one, this is kind of small, but I have a VPN on my home computer, which is a Mac, and it there are certain websites that will, I'll go to log in, and some of them are like financial institutions, and it will not allow me to even access the website until I turn my VPN off, and then I can go and log in.
and then I can turn my, I have to turn my VPN back on when I'm done.
I would call the that organization and say, why is this happening?
Interesting. Okay.
Are you blocking this? Or is there a reason you're blocking this? I am being secure. I want to make sure that I'm accessing the proper site. And that's why I use a VPN, because I want everything encrypted. Okay. And so I would have the conversation with them. Pick up the phone, call them and say, hey, can I talk to somebody about why I can gain access to your site unless I turn my VPN off.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I guess in kind of the grand scheme of everything we've talked about today, that's scary. Technology obviously has some pretty significant benefits in terms of like productivity and improving sort of the quality of life in many ways for a lot of people. But I guess if you had to kind of rule yay or nay on sort of technology, like if you could take us back to 1950 or kind of stay on the status quo, what would be your choice?
I would definitely go with technology.
Okay.
I feel the issue is a lot of these apps draw us in. And over time, what happens is we end up wanting that endorphin high of, has somebody liked my post? You know, has somebody seen my video on Instagram? You know, am I seeing this? Or am I going to have FOMO, you know, fear of missing out if I don't check the latest feed? And I feel like a lot of people fall into that tunnel of scrolling.
Oh, yeah.
And finding,
you know. Doom scrolling.
Yeah.
Doom scrolling.
Yes.
Yes.
And the echo chamber, like I feel this way and then I find five other people who feel this way, which entrenches me in feeling this way. And so I'm not exposing myself to other lines of thought that might make me think more critically about something.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, because I have grandkids, I don't like to turn the TV on when they're at the house and let it play all day.
Sure.
I want to create
their
a game.
Brains are
I want
just
to
melting.
Create something, right? I mean, I was looking around the house and I was like, oh, I have Post-its and I had a piece of cardboard. So I built out this grid and I posted it on the little mirror in the foyer. And on every postcard, I put a letter of the alphabet and 1 through 10. And then I hid them throughout the house. And so their job was to go around the house to find the letter. They find a letter and then they go and they match it up with the letter on, they're 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And so they had so much fun and it lasted like 3 hours.
And you're amazing. Like, my job is still.
You can just doom scroll while they're running around.
then you get to sit back, watch some TV, have a, you know.
No thanks.
That's smart.
But yes, technology, it's good. It's great that it's here. It's great that we're using it. Has improved a lot of things, our lives, you know. We have a whole new generation that's going to thank Miss Rachel. Like I think, you know, Mr. Rogers. You know, I mean, we have
I loved Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I know, right?
R.I.P.
And so it's good as it's evolved, but I feel like we should be limiting it to what our kids are doing, because there's so much of this. Our kids feel like what they see is reality. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, we could stop here, pose for a picture, and we're smiling. Yeah, we're talking about the threats and the dangers, right? But if somebody just saw that picture, they're like, oh, man, they're having a great time, right? But and that's the thing is everybody's out to a family dinner and they smile and they pose for the picture, but everybody's quarreling and everybody's arguing. And you know, we've got the dysfunctional teenagers and, you know, everything going on. The kids that see, oh, these other teenagers have the Mustang and they have this car, they have that car, right? And they're like, why can't I have those things?
Then comparison is the thief of joy.
It's all comparison. And so there's things that I hate about technology and there's things that I love about technology. I love how efficient it can make things and how we can use AI to make things better and come up with you know, new things, and it can teach us things, right? Mm-hmm. Like really quickly. And you can use AI over a search engine and find your answer super fast instead of scrolling through 3 different websites, right? Yeah. Trying to look for the answer through the ads. You can just ask AI, how do I bake salmon, right? Yeah. Like, and it's going to tell you. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to look at a bunch of ads. So there's great uses, but then we need to have the caveat of, should we limit the screen time for the toddlers, the middle schoolers, the teenagers? Because perception is not always reality. And that's the thing that we're really struggling with. And it's not just here, it's everywhere, that, you know, teens are on this downward dive of having to have drugs, talk to psychiatrists, have, you know, help and needing help because of all the things that they're seeing and absorbing, and they're feeling that this is the way it should be, but I don't have that.
Mm-hmm. And they also don't have the language to, like, to develop, like, kind of talk about that, mm-hmm. and feel that in a way that's, like, responsible.
That's right.
Yeah. No, it's heartbreaking.
Good question.
I am glad that I came about, like, Facebook wasn't available to me until I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful for that. And even then, it was like you had to have, I just happened to have a college email address. So I took like a dual enrollment class my senior year, mm-hmm. and you had to have a college email address. And it was just like, you just said random statements, like put a random statement out there, and it was, yeah.
What are you feeling today?
Yeah.
Something.
But I literally just downloaded, well, maybe I'm contributing more to the problem. I literally just downloaded an app yesterday called Be Present, because I saw it ironically in an advertisement on Instagram. And I was like, I'm so sick. Like, as you know, every, like, in the morning when my alarm goes off, and at night when, like, we're done eating dinner, I'm, like, comfortable. And I'm like, well, being on my phone is, like, how I can stay. That's my excuse to, like, just stay in this position that I'm in. And, like, I'd rather mm-hmm. be reading a book or, like, going for a walk or doing anything. And so I got this that, like, I can tell it, like, only let me log into Instagram 5 times a day for 5 minutes at a time.
Oh,
and then,
I like that.
And yeah, and then it has like certain hours where I can like go in and like block all the apps that I don't want to access.
Do you know how many pickups you have a day?
I don't yet because I just started. But
oh no, on your iPhone.
Oh, the screen time.
If you grab your iPhone and just swipe,
it's right over there.
You can look at it and it'll tell you how much time you've used on each app. Excuse me, throughout the day.
Yes, the screen
time. And it'll tell you how many pickups you have, how many times you've picked up your phone. Uh-huh. Yeah, how many times have you picked up your phone and looked at it?
Oh, Jesus.
And it's usually somewhere around 200 in a day.
Yeah. Well, I could see that.
Yeah. Well, and especially
sometimes,
like,
I just check the time, like I'll tap it.
Yes.
Even though I have a computer.
And I have a watch. Yeah, no, I'm trying to like take steps to like get out of that. Because it becomes like a crutch, mm-hmm. and you know, and then my husband was like, "Be careful, because now you're going to just start, like, all of, next thing you know, you're going to be scrolling Amazon just because
you're so bored."
Boost.
You know, I mean, there's great technologies that are out there, right? And it's the question again is, who has access to your data, and are they tracking it, and what do they see, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm a victim of like everybody else, like, you know, Matt with his Samsung. You know, I have the Ring. The thing about the Ring is it tells me if I got good sleep, if I didn't get good sleep, you know, it tells me if my temperature's higher than it normal. Mm-hmm. It's telling me that something's straining my body. So it's keeping up with my health. But what I have noticed over time in using it is, you know, I've cut out alcohol because the pattern of
the
drinking.
The sleep, same.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? Like, cutting out alcohol has said, okay, well, you get better sleep, you know, and then my resting heart rate has dropped.
Yeah.
So if I don't eat after 8 o'clock now, I get much better sleep.
Uh-huh.
And like, I feel so much better, but it's that information that I would not have known had I not been using technology to track it.
Yeah.
Now the question is, you know, what can they do with my data, with my heart rate and my sleep patterns? Mm. I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet, but like, you know, technology can be used for good things.
Mm-hmm.
And so my resting heart rate used to be somewhere hovering around 100, and now it's 60.
Dang, yeah. Holy cow.
I was very stressed and like, you know, chaotic during the day. And now I'm very mindful of like taking those periods to, you know, really sit and analyze what am I stressed about? What can I handle? What am I responsible for? You know, stress.
What am I responding to?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's causing the stress, because stress is self-inflicted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In honor of your new resting heart rate, I will not tell you what I think they want to do with all your biometric data.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my resting heart rate is like, it's in the like mid 50s. And as a consequence, when I am at work, like Garmin has this sleep battery body battery. And so it gives you like, it will spike like orange and yellow when you're in like high stress, or it's blue when you're like calm. And so pretty much every workday,
It's just like a big old block of like yellow and orange.
Uh-huh.
And I'll like, and it'll tell you when there's like high stress times.
Mm-hmm.
And like yesterday there was one and it was like a 3-hour block. And I was like, I thought I was having a pretty good day. Like
I actually felt pretty good.
One of the, I do wonder if like, you know, my resting heart rate when I sleep makes like, you know, the watch think that like if my heart rate's like 85 that I'm like going crazy. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that's one thing that I've known. But yeah, the drinking has been, I do way less of it because I can note, even if I just have one drink, I can have mm-hmm. one drink and see the effect on my sleep and yeah, it absolutely. Makes me crazy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Corey, how much do you hate the passive aggressive language of the Garmin software? Like when you mm-hmm. don't get a good night's sleep?
Oh,
you'll go to check on your body battery.
Non-restorative.
Yeah, and it'll be like, listen to your body today.
And yeah, I'm and like, it'll be like shorter.
Watch your tone, Garmin.
Yeah, it'll be like something along the lines of like shorter than like needed. And I'm like, don't judge me.
Less than ideal.
Yeah, like, less than ideal. That's
you're
what.
A watch. Shut up.
Oh my god.
And it will, or like I'll be going to start a workout, and it'll be like, well, you should probably rest today. And I'm like. Not happening.
What about you, rest watch? Turn it off.
Let me take you off and charge
yeah. you. Well, if I took it off, then the workout doesn't count.
I got to get that data in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time on Brainstorm.